morning, everyone. Today, I want to encourage you to go pick a fight. I want to challenge you to fight for something bigger than just yourself, to look beyond just your day in and day out situations, your own problems, and give your energy to something that is going to last longer, to something that will change maybe your culture, maybe your country, maybe just the lives of the people around you. The last few weeks, Kent was preaching about what to do on the worst day of your life. And he was using it as an example, an Israelite guy named David. And I want to go back a little bit earlier in the story of David to what was a defining moment in his life, something that really set the path for what kind of person he was going to be and how he was going to live his life. To set the scenario, David was the youngest son. Is anyone in here a youngest child, a youngest son? Anyone else? Me too. Yeah. So David was the youngest child, and his oldest brothers were in the army. So they were off, and at the moment, the Israelite people were supposed to be in a battle against this group called the Philistines. The Philistines were not new enemies. And here's something that I want to really get across, is that don't be surprised when an enemy comes back again. If we look further back in the Bible, we see a guy named Shamgar. Weird name, cool guy, who leads the Israelites to fight off the Philistines. And then later, a guy named Samson, he has to lead the Israelites to fight off the Philistines. But the Philistines come back. And then Samuel has to fight off the Philistines. But the Philistines come back. And then King Saul, who's currently the king when David is around, King Saul and his son Jonathan have to fight off the Philistines. But the Philistines come back. They keep coming back. And sometimes in our life, it's like we get surprised when we see an enemy come back to ourselves. Have you ever had something that you just feel like you keep struggling with? Maybe it's anger, and that you've had anger and you've tried to deal with it. You prayed about it. You fasted about it. You got counseling about it. You got friends to really support you in it. And you felt like, oh, I kind of got to this place of peace in my life. But then 2 weeks later, 2 months later, 2 years later, you see this anger start seeping in again. You go, what happened? I thought I dealt with this. And you almost feel defeated by it. It doesn't mean you were defeated. It just means that the enemy came back. Sometimes that happens. And don't be surprised by it. It just means that you have to fight again for it. But as I said, I don't want you to just focus on your personal life. And I want us to see that even in countries, in cultures, sometimes we have enemies that are recurring problems in our cultures. I lived for a few years on an island, and I worked at a newspaper. So all I did all day was read about the problems that were in this island. And you started seeing some of the same things over and over again. Education was always a problem. They had some good teachers, but they still had the worst educational system in the United States. They just kept having these problems time and time again, no matter what they did. Another problem was 30-year-old guys getting 15-year-old women pregnant and then leaving them alone so that the kid was raised without a father. Which was crazy to me, because this was an island that was no more than 30 kilometers long. How far can you run away from someone? But still, somehow, these boys and girls kept being raised without having their fathers around. These were recurring problems in that culture. And if you take just a little bit to look, no matter what culture, you'll find problems. And it's pretty easy to pick out, oh, these are some of the things that seem to happen. In the Netherlands, I can give you a few really easily. Prostitution is something that is legalized here and comes around a lot, where you see these sexual problems, sexual sins, is a big deal in the Netherlands. Another one is a humanistic mindset that God is either not existent or God is not important. And that's something that you see very often around here. You have these recurring enemies. So don't be surprised when you see it. But then you have to stand up and do something about it to fight it off. Now, there are two ways that sometimes we look at things when an enemy comes back. You can either have confidence because you know that you've beaten an enemy before, so you can beat him again. It's like the class bully. If he comes up and he attacks you and you beat him, then the next time that he's going to try and do something mean to you, like, yeah, I can beat this guy. And that's a good confidence to have. A danger is we get complacent, which is Yeah, it comes back and go, I dealt with that before, and it's okay to have it. Because if we look at the Israelites with the Philistines, yeah, they'd beat them off a couple of times. They'd also lost a couple of times and been slaves to them. And somehow we get this mindset of, if I win, I win. If I lose, I lose. I've done that before. And you know what? It's just okay if I give in this time. Please don't do that. Don't become complacent and think it's okay. There's a verse later in the Bible. It's in Romans chapter 6, verse 14. And he says, sin shall not be your master. Now, the Israelites had got so used to having the Philistines kind of take them over for a little bit. And then they'd have to fight them off again. But the thing is to stop them before you become a slave. And the same thing with sin in your own life. Stop it before you become a slave to it. Don't be surprised if it comes back and you get tempted. It's okay to be tempted. But don't give in to it. Fight against it. So here's David, and his older brothers are off at war. And David's dad says, oh, David, would you go see how your brothers are doing in the army? So David is supposed to take some stuff with him, and his dad says, here, take some bread and take this grain, take this to your brothers, and take these like big wheels of cheese and take those to their commander. One thing I didn't know before I started looking at this sermon is that apparently the Israelites are old ancestors of the Dutch people. Bread and cheese, that's like the two food groups of Dutch people. So obviously Israelites must have been Dutch people, that David is having to take this bread and this cheese to his brother and to the commanders. But David is a shepherd. So first, before he goes, he has to find some other shepherd guy and say, hey, watch over my sheep for me. I got to go do my job. So David goes, gets to his brothers, and he comes to the scene right as the armies are getting ready to assemble for that day. So he's excited and he has to go in. But you're not going to take bread and cheese like into a battlefield line. So he finds, they called him like the keeper of the things. And he leaves the bread and cheese there and says, hey, I'm going to come back for it, but first I got to find my brothers. And David starts running off into the middle of this battlefield scene for him to get to his brothers. Now, how the battle was situated was it was at a place called the Valley of Elah. So you have this valley in between, and then you have the Philistines standing on one hill over here, and you have the Israelites standing on one hill over here, and they're just like staring across each other. But if you know like military tactics, you don't want to be the first one to run down into this valley, because then the people will stay on the hill, and then they'll just attack down at you. So they're sort of at a stalemate, because neither person wants to really move too fast. But there's this giant guy. His name is Goliath, and he's about 3 meters tall. He's just a huge, huge guy. And he is on the Philistine side, and he steps out, and he walks a little bit down this hill. And then he shouts out,
I defy the army of the Israelites! Who are you but servants of King Saul? And I'm a Philistine. Send a man to fight me. And if he kills me, we'll serve all of you. But if I kill him, all of you will serve us. Except for him, because he's dead.
And David sees this and goes, who is this guy who comes out shouting like he's something important? And saying that he defies the Israelites and their God. And David finds out that this guy has done this 40 days in a row. He comes out, he walks a little bit down, he yells out, I defy the armies of Israel. And then he waits after he's done with it. And no one moves. And then I guess they like go home, make supper, like do their thing, wait for the next morning, get stand in their two lines on the hillsides. He walks down, yells his thing. They've done this for 40 days. Nothing. And David's like, what is this? And so he's asking, like, who is this guy? What is this? And some of the guys say, you know what the king will do for the man who kills him? He's gonna give him one of his daughters to marry, so you get to marry a princess, and that man's family won't have to pay taxes. Ever. Ever. Dave's like, are you serious? And so he finds another guy. He's like, so what's the king going to do for someone who does this? And he goes, they're going to get to marry his daughter, and they're not going to have to pay taxes. David keeps asking these people, and finally his brother hears about it, and he finds David. He's like, David, I know you. You're just a wicked person why aren't you watching those few sheep that you have back home? And you just wanted to see the battle. Now, 2 points. Number one, David doesn't have to feel bad about this. When the guy says, why aren't you watching your sheep back home? Because David learned an important lesson. You make sure to take care of what is your job. He was supposed to be watching the sheep. He found someone else to watch the sheep. He didn't just run away from his job because he had some dream of grandeur. And sometimes we have this, oh, this job isn't important, so I'll leave this, and I'll go and try and do something more important. No, you make sure to take care of your job. And that's what David did. He made sure a shepherd was there. And then he made sure this keeper of the things was going to watch the cheese and the bread. So David's like, doesn't matter. I did my job. And then if I were David, which I was not, I would have looked around and been like, I came to see a battle? Where's the battle? He yells, you stand here and look frightened. Who's not doing their job? But David doesn't do this. David just goes, what are you getting mad at me for? I just asked a question. And so he keeps going around and he's asking these questions. David could have had this mentality that thought, you know what? I'm just here to see my brothers. This is not my job to get in the middle of this mess. Because look, here's an army of men. Any one of those can go fight this man. Any one of those. And you know what? It is their job. But it's not my job. Let them go do their thing. But David gets this mentality in him of, you know what? If no one else is going to do it, I should do it. Sometimes if you look in a church, people get this mentality as well of like, well, that's Pastor Kent. He should go do that. That's his job. Oh, there's someone sitting by themselves in the corner. Well, Marco, he's on the stage. People know him. Marco should go talk to him. Oh, this is someone else's job. And the answer is no. You have to go, you know what? Whether it's my job or not, if it needs to get done, fine, I'll do it. Have that kind of David mentality of fine. I'll do it because someone needs to. So as David keeps asking these questions, then King Saul hears about this and he goes, oh, bring this David guy in. So David walks in and says, look, King, don't let this guy make you afraid. Don't let this bother you anymore. I'll go fight him. And the king goes, look, you're just a young boy. And he's been fighting since he was, I don't know, like knee high, which was probably when he came out of his mom, because this guy's just huge. He's probably born up to her waist. And the weird thing about this is just one chapter before, if you read it, some of King Saul's men are talking to Saul and say, oh, you should bring David into your service because he's this good harp player, but he's also known for being a good warrior. We always think, oh, David must have been this like little baby kid who was 6 years old, just because it's good to tell those for children's stories. But David wasn't some guy who had never done anything in his life before. David was already known for being a warrior, but the king is like, no, you're not ready. You're not good enough. David goes, I were David once again. I'm not ready. Who else is? Because none of them are doing nothing. But David says, no, look, I've been a shepherd. And when there was a lion that came and grabbed one of the sheep, I had two choices. Let lion run off with sheep, or go chase down the lion, get out the sheep, beat the tar out of this lion. I chose option two. And when there was a bear that came and stole sheep, I did the same thing. I could have said, you know what? My life is a little more important than that sheep. I guess he's getting to have like a hero skotel off somewhere else so he can have his lamb's meat. But this isn't my job. But he said, no, I'm the shepherd here. I'm going to cover what my job is. And if that means killing this lion and killing this bear, I did it. And you know what? If that means right now it's killing that big doofus, I'll do that too. So the king's like, okay, I see the passion in this guy. I like this. This is good. So the king then says, fine, you can go fight him. Here, take my armor, take my sword, take my shield. Because the Israelites at this time weren't the wealthiest nation. And so not every man had a sword and had a shield. In fact, earlier it just said that only the king, Saul, and his son Jonathan did. So David's not used to ever having a sword or having a shield. And now he's like having to put on all this armor and he goes, this just ain't gonna work. This is nice, thank you, but I can't use this. I don't know what to do with this. I'm not practiced with this. Sometimes in your own life, when you think, oh, I want to go do something for God, do something important, people will start telling you like, oh, well, you need to have this, you need to have that. Oh, you want to start a church? You need to have a nice sound system and a good band. You need to have a guy who can preach really well. You need to have lots of big activities so people can come to it, or else you can't start a church. And that, he's like, you can't go fight a giant unless you have a sword and a shield and armor. And he's like, I don't know what to do with that right now. I'm going to start with what I have. And that's something that we really need to see and learn, is that you start with what you have. That even if you don't have all the fancy technology or all the fancy education or all the fancy anything else, you start with what you have and then see what God's going to do with it. So David takes off all his armor and he just starts walking through, and he's got his staff, his shepherd's staff he's used to. He's got a sling. He picks up some stones and he's just walking through the crowd of the army that's all standing, not doing anything. And you have this moment where there's all these people around you, and then you step out past the last line of people, and then there's no one else around you, and you're just walking down this hill all alone. But David doesn't think that he's all alone. If you look at some of the Psalms that he wrote later, in Psalms 36, he talks about that every man is underneath the shadow of God's wing. In Psalm 63, he says, God, you have been my help. I will sing beneath the shadow of your wing. And maybe you just need to have that thing where you pray, God, I have to do something important, but I can't do this alone. I need to be under the shadow, under the protection of your wing. So David walks down confidently down this hillside. And the Philistine, oh, guy, looks and he goes, oh, someone's come to fight me. And he's a little happy because he likes a fight. So he starts walking down this hillside. But as he gets closer, he's able to see a little better that this is not some big man of war who's wearing armor. And he starts yelling out like, what am I, a dog? You came out with a stick to beat me off? I'm going to kill you, little one. I'm going to feed you to the birds. And David's like, all right. And he has this big speech where David says, you've defied the armies of God. I'm going to chop off your head. Today the Lord will conquer you. I will kill you and cut your head off. And then I will give the dead bodies of your men to the birds and wild animals. And the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. And everyone assembled here will know that the Lord rescues his people, but not with sword and spear. This is the Lord's battle, and he will give you to us. This is his rousing speech, I guess, to himself, that he's yelling at this Philistine. He says, I'm going to kill you, and it's not going to be because of a sword or because of a spear or because I have the latest technology or because I have what you think I need to have to fight this battle. And sometimes we have things now that to solve some of these problems, like I was talking about earlier, the problems in your community that we go, oh, well, they don't have to be solved with a sword and spear, but we have other things that are like swords and spears to us, like education or government, where we put our trust in things other than God, and we say, if we just educate everyone, then that will solve all of these problems. These are tools. They're good. Swords and spears aren't bad. They're tools, but don't put your trust in them, because education isn't going to fix every problem in the world. If you look at some of the hijackers who carried out the September 11th terrorist attacks, these were not stupid men. Most of them had gone to a college education for a while and came from a nice family. Most bad dictators in the world weren't stupid people. It wasn't for a lack of education. You cannot educate evil out of a man's heart. But that doesn't mean that you avoid education. Government as well. Sometimes you say, oh, well, we just need the government to fix this. I come from the United States of America, and I will be honest that there are a lot of Americans who need to learn that democracy will not save the world. May I also say that some Europeans might want to learn that social systems also will not save the world. Neither will neutrality, neither will anarchy, neither will having everyone under Sharia law. Even when we look in the Old Testament, you have God over a government with his perfect law being used, and God says, the point of it was never that this would make everything better. This would not lead to salvation. The best thing that this government and this law ever did was point out that people needed to be saved. You also shouldn't put your trust just in religious systems, religious establishments. The Pope will not save the world. An elder board will not save the world. Your trust must be in God first. So David starts running towards this big giant who's like burling down the hill now. David takes out one stone, puts it in the sling, slings it, hits him smack in the head. I remember when I was younger, I loved to play baseball with my older brother. And my older brother is bigger than me. He's taller, he's wider, he's everything more than I am. Here's the point of this game. Matthew has ball, and he tries to throw the ball past big brother Jimmy. Jimmy has a stick, and he tries to hit the ball back instead of letting the ball get past him. Matthew throws ball. Big brother hits ball with stick, and the ball came straight back and drilled me right in the chest. I crumpled on the ground. This is what happens to Goliath, except it's not just his chest. It's right in the head. He gets this, bam, right in the head, and he's plop. That's just what happens to you. But then David runs up, pulls out the sword of Goliath, and chops off his head. Rewind. It is not with sword or with spear that I will defeat you. Fast forward. David takes out the sword and chops off the head of Goliath. It wasn't the sword that he was trusting in, but that doesn't mean you can't use a sword. When I said that don't trust in education or government, I have a college degree. My beautiful fiance has a higher degree than I do, and I'm encouraging her to get more of one. It's a tool, and it's not a bad thing. David used a sword to kill him, and then David takes the sword and keeps it for apparently the rest of his life and uses a sword many more times. Government will not save the world, yet one of my best friends is currently a lobbyist to the European Parliament. And I encourage it because God uses people in government as well as in education, as well as in all these things. So David chops off the head of Goliath. What has now changed? If you step back, army on this side, army on this side, one man has died. Look, these are all soldiers. They've seen lots of men die. One man. Now, if you're in a fight that's like two people versus two people and you lose one person, that changes the odds a lot. If you have a couple thousand versus a couple thousand and one man dies, that doesn't change the odds so much. What has really changed in the big scheme of things? Very little. But what changed in their hearts was huge. And that when the Philistines saw that this big guy was dead, they all start freaking out. And all these guys who have been standing for 40 days, doing nothing, just staring and listening to a guy shout at them, all go, wait, let's run after him. And so David's brothers and all the guys that David was asking, what's the king going to do for the man who kills this guy? Start charging down this valley, up the other side of it, and chase the Philistines all the way back to their city, where the Philistines are cowering now in their city with their doors closed, crying. Because one man decided he was going to go pick a fight. And it changed the mentality of everyone else around him. Now, this isn't the last time that we see the Philistines. Remember, I said enemies can come back. And throughout the rest of David's life, we see him fighting enemies like the Philistines again and again. But by the time that his son Solomon becomes king, the Bible says that the Israelites had peace on every side. And the Philistines weren't an enemy anymore. You may have to fight them once, you may have to fight them five times, but eventually, if you look with a long-range goal, you can change a country. It may not happen in one moment with one fight, but if you keep working towards it, it might. Last week, we showed a film clip from Braveheart, where William Wallace gives this great speech to his people, and I want to show what happens right after that moment. He's just finished giving this huge speech, and then he starts riding off to go pick a fight, like he said. Now, the thing that I want to most focus on is what his friend said after that. After he has ridden off, his friend says, Well, we didn't get dressed up for nothing. You see, up until that point, that army, sure, they got dressed up real nice. They came, made sure that they brought their weapons with them. They stood in a nice line. They heard a nice speech. They got a little excited, said some things, shouted a little bit. But until that point, they had done very little except just get ready to do something bigger. And if he didn't go pick a fight, they were just going to go home, and nothing would have changed. They would have continued to be oppressed. Their families would have still had the same problems, and they would have been seen as slaves. I want to ask you, what'd you come dressed up for this morning? Because, yeah, you look very nice, and you probably made sure to bring your Bible, and you stand in very nice lines, and you're hearing, hopefully, what's a nice talk, and then you get a little excited, and you say some things, but after that is done, then what happens? Will you just go home? In the book of 1 Corinthians, Paul says, come back to your senses and stop sinning as you ought, because there are some among you who are ignorant of God. And I say this to your shame. Now, can you think of a pastor saying this today to a group of people, being like, there are people in your city who don't know who God is, and shame on you for that. But Paul was serious about this. And he goes, you know why there are so many people around who go, where is your God? Because he's not seeing him in you. There was Mother Teresa, and people had asked her, like, oh, well, have you ever seen God, or what do you do with that? And she said, you know what? Every time I see people in need, I see Jesus in disguise. Mother Teresa was the kind of person that never had to feel bad. They're like, oh, well, where is your God? She went, I can show you where my God works. My God works in a leper colony. When there are two lepers who are taking care of each other and making special shoes to fit on their feet because their toes have already disintegrated off. But there's love there, and that's where my God is. And there are times when the reason why we don't see God around us so much is because we stand in a nice line and we get all excited about it, but then we don't go out and do something. But if people would see it, then maybe that would make a difference. Jesus in Matthew 25, and I used this in an earlier sermon, he's talking to people and he says, you know what? Whatever you did for those who were the least of these, those that were needy, those that needed help, you did it just for me. That's where I was. And that's why at Damascus Road, we don't want to be people who just sit here, who come into these nice four walls of a stay okay, call it a church, and call it okay and go home. So what I'd like to know is, what did you come dressed up for this morning? Did you come dressed up to go pick a fight? Or did you come just dressed up so you can go home?